I'm Jay Burgess, and we're at Studio 144. And this is, for the last, 7 years, has been the Polly's rehearsal / studio. And before then, it was Dwight Springer's and John Paul. I guess it kind of still is Dwight Springer and John Paul Springer's studio. However, they're nice enough to lease it to us, I guess would be the proper term. It was built in 2000, 2001, and it was for Dwight and his friends to come up here and chill and play, drink, and also have the capability of recording something if they chose to.
Nice.
And then it turned into when Sons of Roswell came into the picture, we came up here and they told me if I learned the gear that we could just cut it for free. And I think at the time that might have been a thought that, like, oh well, he can come up here at any given moment and record us and it sounded and so from then on out, we just, you know, kind of let it be known amongst friends that there's a place out here that you could record at for cheap. And so, and then it kind of went to where we didn't want to tell anybody, and kind of now again we're telling people about it.
Nice. So it's the Polly's practice space, and then y'all just use it to record projects for whoever you're kind of interested in working with.
Yeah, whoever we're, you know, I would say whoever we're digging, but I mean, like, I guess whoever we're digging at the time, for sure.
Yeah. How's it sound in here?
Sounds good. It's you can mic it to where you can get a very live sound, or you can put like drums in that space and get a kind of dead drum sound. So it depends on whatever you're looking for. I mean, like, we love it, but yeah, we're also used to it.
Right.
We're used to using, I think Questlove, I was listening to something on Questlove talk about the Wu-Tang Clan not too long ago, and he was talking about how RZA, you know, only had a couple of SM57s and an ADAT, you know, a crappy ADAT machine, or maybe like a 4-track machine, and that's how, you know, Wu-Tang would make their records. And you could tell when RZA moved up to like a real studio, because that's when, you know, the creativity of recording got lost, because now you have all this stuff that you've always wanted to use. And so it was like, yeah, that should go to the kick drum, and this should go to the snare, and, you know, and use the coals as the overhead, and so on and so on, because now you have access to every single thing that you want.
So you just do whatever you're supposed to do with it, instead of trying to, like, figure out how to make it work.
Instead of, I mean, like, I feel like a microphone can be used as an instrument. So, like, if you really dig deep in there, you can figure out new things to do with it that nobody else has figured out how to do with it. Even like an SM57, which is like everybody that's ever recorded music has used an SM57. And you can literally, I'm sure there is something new that somebody can figure out with just that microphone and how to make it sound different if you put it a couple of feet away from this thing or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the thing up here is, like, you know, here recently we bought some new stuff, and so we're trying to get into that world and just kind of like not buy any more new stuff until we figure out what to do with this stuff.
Uh-huh. I like that philosophy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you're not experimenting or trying to figure something out, you're kind of like stagnant
or replicating.
Doing the same thing that you've always done. I do that.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I do too. I mean, like, in a lot of, I mean, with certain, I mean, the mic placement we usually use on drums is the Glenn Johns method of micing drums. And, but, you know, inside trying to replicate those drum sounds, you start to find little creative things that, like, oh, if we put the tom mic a little angled a little further, it sounds this way.
Nice.
You know, or whatever. Or we lower the overhead, it's almost like you could just use the overhead as the snare and rack tom and cymbal mic, you don't even really need a snare mic sometimes, you know, like certain things like that, you know, just messing with something that you've learned from somebody
else. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So the Polys are, well, the Polys have changed a lot over the years. Y'all have kind of reinvented yourselves many, many times, it seems like, just from an outside perspective.
No. I mean, like, I make jokes all the time about doing a show with every Poly member.
That'd be a pretty big stage.
That's the problem, is that there's not a stage large enough.
That's a pretty cool problem. So I want to go like so many directions with this. Let's stick with the recording side. So like, I guess I just didn't know that this was a component of what you do. Like, I've always known you as like a musician,
right?
Playing like a performance,
right?
Musician, and then you're out here like getting technical and, you know, recording all this stuff. And okay, so tell me some of the projects that you're most proud of that have been recorded out here that you've been involved in.
Recently, our drummer John did like a solo record called Hira, and it was actually really challenging because John was the one that he just kind of engineered it and recorded it all, and then I had to come in and mix it. But John likes to use microphones in a really not a strategical way. It's just kind of like he just puts them up and then he'll hit the record button, come out here and check and play a little bit and see what everything kind of sounds like. And then he's like, all right, cool, that sounds cool. And then I'm in charge of figuring out how to actually make it sound good. And so that was fun because by the end of that project, that's where I kind of learned the overhead thing that I was telling you about, like, because on most of those tracks, he had, you know, not paying attention, the arm on the stand had started to slide, and so it was super close to his head, and so, like, you're picking up all this, you know, you're picking up the kit, not just the cymbals or the room, you're picking up the actual kit, and so that's where I learned, like, oh, well, the overhead could just be, that's my snare drum rack tom.
So you kind of like ended up liking, liking so the way it sounded.
It was fun, you know, to do that type of stuff. And then I'm trying to think of recently, Transmissions, the last Polly's record, was all of that was recorded out here.
Nice. I know Doc's recorded out here some.
I think they finished up his last record, and I'm having trouble. I'm spacing on the name of it. The one with Catch the owl on the front. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
I think they finished up some overdubs over out here with Ben. We did that Shoals cover record thing out here.
Oh, yeah.
Between here and our lake house. I'd moved all the gear out there, and we did some stuff out there. Ursa Locomotus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, their EP was cut out here. I'm telling you, we're on a couple of Planet Ink albums were done out here. I mean, a lot of Dylan LeBlanc's demos and such were cut out here, which is fun to go back and listen to from time to time because they're totally different.
Are they?
Oh, dude, it's just me, him, and John. So
that's awesome.
There's no strings. There's no, you know, anything.
So was that intentional to, like, did you always want to do that and just not have the access, or did you just kind of fall into it by just having access to the gear of like recording, or
fell into it?
Yeah.
But then I also started, you know, like in Sons of Roswell, the first actual record we ever made was on like a Tascam 4-track. And Kevin, the singer, it was the person that knew all about it. But I was kind of fascinated as to how he made it all work and sound as good as you could possibly make a record sound on a 4-track.
4-track, yeah.
And so he would, you know, literally mic the drums with 2 microphones and, or 3 microphones. And then we bounce all 3 of those drums down to a mono track. And so now that track's taken up with drums. So now we have essentially 2 open tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's like, what's next? And then, you know, you record on these 2 and then you bounce down this other track and so on and so on, and it goes on and on. And so, like, I got really fascinated with the whole process of doing that, not really figuring out the 4-track myself per se, but like then then it came around to making, like, let's make this sound decent. And came out here in a day with a friend of mine who knew about recording consoles and all this compressors and all this shit. I knew nothing about any of it, you know. And just took out, like, a spiral notebook and started, like, making notes of everything he was saying. Because phones couldn't record,
sure,
you know, at that time.
Yeah.
You didn't have a camera phone either, or I didn't anyway.
Right.
And so that's basically how it started. It's like literally one day I'm in here with that guy for probably 4 hours writing all these notes down. And then the next day, I think, is when we started cutting the Sons of Roswell record.
Wow.
And didn't know how it was going to really turn out until Jimmy Nutt heard it first time when he was mixing it, and he's like, "Where'd y'all cut this at?" It's like, "Out in Green Hill, at the studio out in Green Hill." And he's like, "This sounds really good."
Nice.
Like, awesome.
Jimmy approved.
Yeah, exactly. I'd heard so much about him but never met him, so it was kind of like, you know, for him to actually.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So tell me more about the Pollies. So you guys, I guess it's, did you start the band? Like, tell me the origin story of the Pollies. Do you mind if? I don't know if I've, I actually do not know
this. I haven't told this story in so long, so so I'm just probably just gonna make up, I won't make up stuff, but it's
you can make, hey man, as long as you're the one making it up, it's okay.
Some falsified information in there somewhere, but to the best of my memory, it was Kevin from Sons of Roswell went to have, or was having a kid, little girl. And we just finished a second record on that band. And
so when is this?
This would be somewhere, I'm terrible with dates. I would think somewhere in the neighborhood of like 2010.
Okay.
Maybe even 2011 or 12. I don't really know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And so I'm sitting there kind of trying to figure out, oh, do I just sit here and wait? You know, and see what Kevin's going to decide to do, or do I just go on? And I talked to some friends who were like, you know, you need to stop worrying about finding a band and just create your own band and write and sing and this and other. So I was like, so I decided.
Were you singing in Sons of Roswell?
Not really. I was singing backgrounds.
Okay.
Doing a really shitty job of it. I've never been the best harmony singer, but. Around this time I'd already started doing some stuff with like Dylan, and then he got his record deal with Rough Trade, and so I was going back and forth with him and John Nashville to mix that first record of his.
Love that record.
And so I started, that's when I started, like, I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna start trying to come up with stuff and see what happens. And showing, I think it was just me and John, for whatever reason, meeting Dylan in Nashville. And I had a phone at that time that could record.
John Davis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could record audio, but it could only record a minute. So I had a minute to get down the arrangement, to get across the idea of the song.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so I would sit there for hours trying to figure out how to do that, and then I'd record on this thing. You can only save so many.
Right.
And so, but I started showing John some of these recordings, and he was like, oh, this is cool, that's cool, so on and so on. And so me and him, after that record got done, started coming up here and recording, and Chris James would come up here with us. So I guess the three of us were kind of like the founding, like, first three members of the Pollies.
And Chris was playing bass.
Chris was playing bass, and he also played, like, I don't know. At that time, we all played, the three of us would play just about anything that we needed to play to record whatever we wanted to. So then Chris talked me into getting Daniel Stoddard, who at the time I thought was just a pedal steel player. And I told him I wanted to stay away from pedal steel because I didn't want to get pigeonholed in that. Americana.
Right.
And Daniel ended up coming in with a keyboard. Like, at first, that's all they played was keyboards. Well, then Ben had heard some of the demos we've done, Ben wanted to be a part of it. So Ben came in. And so Daniel started going back and forth between guitar, pedal steel, and keyboards. And then that was the group that made the first record.
Nice.
Yeah. And that was over the... I mean, I think there was only... I think two of the demos were used for the first record, and the rest of it was recut. You know. And that was over a span.
Did y'all record that here?
Yeah. And that was over a span of probably, I don't know...
months?
Years.
Years.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, you know, John and Ben were, and Daniel were all traveling around with Dylan.
Right.
For that first record, and all the projects that they were involved with at the time, it was a headache to get everybody's schedules together.
Right. So what happened with that record? Like, what did y'all...
Well,
did y'all tour around some, or...
Yeah, we did. Actually, it's kind of funny. I was telling this story recently. I met a guy named Jeff Travis from Dylan's first record. He was, I think he's the president of Rough Trade Records. And I not met him, but through email I met him. Digitally.
Yes. Hands.
And so I just sent him the record on a whim. And was like, here, I think you might like it. And so he ended up loving it. And I don't really know the backstory of it all. All I know is, like, he was like, I want it. Then he came back saying that the table had turned it down. The table had turned it down. So then he started trying to help me find a U.S. label. He wasn't focused on Europe.
Because they were in England? Or
yeah, England. And so he started giving me, like, all these big indie label contacts and would, you know, CC me in on the emails. And anyway, we got turned down by every single one of them. And a small little label out of Atlanta called This Is American Music.
Oh yeah.
Ended up picking up the record and did a really good job. I mean, like, on that record, the budget was, you know, nil. I mean, like, nothing. I mean,
right.
And they didn't have a lot of money. I think we were the first band that they had ever done a physical copy of an album for. And I'm sure they...
I thought they were in Chattanooga. Or did they end up going to Chattanooga?
No. They've always... When I met them, Corey and Coop were both in Atlanta.
Okay.
Now, Corey's moved around a little bit. Nick used to be a partner in it. And he's in Chattanooga.
Gotcha.
Maybe that was the Chattanooga...
Maybe.
...connection. But however, it was like Parker.
There's a tornado siren.
Oh no, we're doing an interview.
Oh,
that's all right. Y'all can come in. Y'all can come in.
Me and Popper and Lodge, we're going to get a battery for a shrink.
Okay.
Downtown.
Yeah, as long as you're back by 6:30.
We're just going.
Okay. All right. Be careful. So, I'm trying to remember where I was at. Oh, yeah, This American Music. And I think they spent like $1,000 on CDs or something. But then they did all the press themselves, and like to this day, there's still people that I guess paid attention to that record that were younger, and they'll ask me, like, who did press on your first record? It's like, nobody. Not a single person did press on my... I mean, well, Coop and Corey and them I know did, but... It was DIY. It wasn't,
yeah.
They didn't have all the contacts in the world to, you know. And then after that, we left them. And I remember to this day still having the meeting. Corey from This American Music had came up to Florence and was hanging out for a few days. And Ben wanted to hang out. So we went upstairs on the rocks kind of early on when nobody was there. And we're having some drinks, and Ben had asked me about the next Polly's record, and I was like, well, you know, like, I got everything written, trying to just figure out, like, where to do it, what to do with it. And he was like, I mean, you can come to Sing-A-Lot. And I hadn't really I'd heard of it, but didn't really know any of the details about what it was, or
right.
You know, who is all involved. And But Corey from This American Music is literally like, Ben's here, I'm here, or Corey's here and I'm in the middle, and Ben says this, and Corey's like, we can talk about that later, you know, kind of. And so,
because he wanted to put it out.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Ben knew. I mean, Ben knew we only signed like a 1-year deal with them.
Uh huh.
So he knew that it was open. Sure. It was up in the air, and we ended up going with Single Lock on the next record, which is the only record we recorded some overdubs here, but we didn't do the initial recording. We did that in Dialback Sound down in Water Valley, Mississippi.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and then we ended up going back to This American Music for the last record.
For Transmissions?
Yeah. And then I think we're going to go back to Single Off for the next
one. Nice. So,
and hopefully just remain there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the Polys have changed a lot over the years, or at least the lineup's changed a lot over the years. Is that just a matter of like who's available at the time, or like
it's a little, I mean, there's one thing I will say about every member of the band. They're really good at being tight-lipped about what happens, whether it be tense or not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's people who quit because they didn't like something I was doing or whatever. And there's people that, you know, I had to let go because they were being dumb.
Sure.
But I mean, like in some of them, I mean, like for instance, Ben, I mean, like I've always considered Ben a member in general, like this whole time. But I can remember the first time that Ben told me he was going to have to cancel a date and he felt bad about it. And I was like, well, why you got to cancel? And he's like, the Shakes are doing SNL. I was like, shut the fuck up, man. This whiny shit, go do SNL, man.
Yeah, for sure.
And so Ben went on to play, you know, with the Shakes, and I think Daniel kind of just got tired of the road.
Yeah.
And John, I think at first got tired of the road and how much money it didn't pay at the time, and then, you know, everybody, I can't remember all the reasons for everyone. I know a little bit of some.
So y'all have kind of, I don't know if it's really transitioned, but I know at one point y'all were like Dylan's essentially band, or was that something that, like, did he approach y'all about that, or was that very organic, or like how did that go down?
He approached us. At the time it was me, Cody Geiser, Anson Honey, Spencer Duncan, and Clint Chandler. And he had just lost his other band. And so he asked if we would do it. Which is really weird because at the time we had a manager. Of course, he has his manager. And it wasn't like one of these things where I could just be like, yeah. And he'd be like, cool, let's do it. We had to go through managers, you know. So it took a little while to like kind of navigate through all that, and I'm glad it did go through managers, because, you know, I mean, like our manager got us a better deal than what we were going to get.
Nice.
But yeah, we did that for a while. We did a record with him, and which me and John had been on. I was on the first and the third
of Dylan's records.
Yeah, and John was on the first and the second. And then, of course, we both were on the last one. But
that seemed to be a good fit.
Yeah, it was nice.
Or at least for Dylan.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize that to be able to travel for a long period of time in close quarters with the same people every single day and not knowing just about anybody in the next city you're going to, gets really hard. And luckily, you know, after Cody and Anson had left, John, I talked John into coming back. And the Four Polys out of this lineup have never had any major issues. It's been pretty easy going. And, but yeah, it gets tough, you know, especially if you go through breakups or, you know, addictions, whatever. I mean, like, things happen, and so
yeah,
it was fun. So, I'm not going to say never, but it was fun.
So now y'all are, I know y'all have started doing a lot of like backup work for other people or recording sessions.
Well, through that,
in the Shoals.
Yeah, through that came a lot of people asking for us to record on their records or back them up in a live setting, which half of us are still wanting to go out and tour a lot this year, and the other half, who's the older half, is like, oh, I just want to stay at home. And so we, you know, the four of us still do the session work, and only half of us, I think, really want to go back out this year. And then next year, of course, we'll kick it back up. But
nice, with the Pollies.
The Pollies, and then we got another guy we're working with, and hopefully his stuff will come out next year as well. And but yeah, definitely.
So do you like to be a touring musician, or do you like to...
I would rather be a side guy. I'm not good with the talking, so I like to try to make...
You mean like on stage or something?
Yeah, I try to make the shows, the song go in from one to another, to where like I'm thinking about, you know, the relative key from this song to this song. So yeah, these two will work together.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but like it's going to be kind of weird going from this tempo or whatever the case may be. But that's all to keep me from having to talk to the crowd.
Nice.
Yeah. But.
So y'all are kind of backing up a lot of people in the recording industry here.
Yeah.
So that, let's talk about that AL.com article that came out.
Okay.
So someone compared y'all to like the new
Swampers.
The new like rhythm section or swamp, you know, the new Swampers of the Shoals. Did they just come up with that, or like what do you,
for sure,
how I mean, do you feel about
none
that?
None of us gave that to them.
They just kind of made that up.
Yeah. I mean, how
does that sit with you?
I mean, I don't feel bad about it. It's a compliment, I'm sure. And I mean, I probably don't feel bad if that were to come to fruition either. But I don't know. I mean, like, I think things are different nowadays.
Yeah.
Producers got their guys that they like to use. Kind of like Wexler liked using those guys.
Uh-huh.
But also, you know, through Wexler, other producers started liking those guys. And they ended up having a super awesome long career, you know, from that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't feel bad about it. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I think it goes back to what I was saying about pedal steel in the beginning. I don't want to be pigeonholed as any one thing. So, I don't know. I'm the type of guy that's... I don't know. I guess I'm ADD in the sense of I want to do it. A lot of different things, and so I might be doing this one thing for a minute, and then it's like, no, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to go over here to the opposite side of what I'm doing, and I do that all the time. So in that sense, being the new Swampers, that would be phenomenal for my mindset to be able to go from Rod Stewart to fucking, I don't know, Waylon Jennings.
Yeah. Yes,
would be great. But
so how do you think you guys, or you specifically, like, fit into, like, the new era of what, like, what's going on around here? Like, well, let me just ask you, like, what do you think, how do you see the, like, we have a, in Muscle Shoals music, I guess there's this legacy, like the recording legacy that all you guys grew up with,
right?
You know, that,
right,
that everybody's aware of, and you know, it became noteworthy to some level, in an awesome way. But it was mostly, I guess what we're known for is more of the recording side of things, but mm-hmm. it seems like a lot of the new era are more like performance space or writers, or y'all are just doing your thing as musicians.
Right.
So where do you see, like, where do you see everything going, like, in the future of this town and from a music standpoint? Like, do you think it will carry on?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to die.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think there's, whether it be cheesy or cliche to say or not, but I think there's a thing about the area that, like, it's just going to keep on happening. I don't know. I mean, like, the music world changes on a regular basis. So, you know, we're back then to have somebody like Jimmy Johnson, who is the guitar player slash engineer slash sometimes a producer, was kind of rare back then. Back then you had your producer, your engineer, your assistant engineer, you know, the gopher, the intern, whatever, you know, and then you had your bass player, you had your horn section, and you had all these people with individual jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, you know, that's probably the reason why I started trying to learn how to do the recording side of it, was it's not going to happen anymore. I mean, like, that's kind of long and gone. Now you have to put on a ton of hats every day if you're going to do it. And unless you just get really lucky. And so,
if you're going to do what? Like,
if you're going to do music the way you want to do music, you either A, have to be 0.1 percentile of people wanting to do what you're wanting to do, or you go do everything yourself until somebody starts picking up on it and spreads the word. So I think in that, to get back to like this area, I think it's still going to be around. And I think the interesting thing is that you're going to have kids that get a little bit more clever about how to do these certain things that you have to do on a daily basis to achieve the goals that you're wanting to achieve. And they're probably going to get really good at it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, like, Kyle from Space Tiger is kind of crazy. Every time he comes out with a record, I see him growing and getting better at what he's doing. And from what I know, it's basically, you know, a lot of him at home on a computer. No, I can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I have to have a drummer
and yeah,
certain people involved who create what's in my head.
So if this area is going to continue to be like mentionable in the music world, like, how do you think that'll go down? Like, do you think the recording legacy will continue, or do you think, like,
I don't know, because I don't know. That's the side of it that I don't know. We got Jackson Highway, which is good, and you got Fame. So I think those two studios will continue to get a lot of work.
They're still working.
Yeah, because of their legacy. I don't know. Like, there's a part of me that thinks that the home studio of sorts is probably what's going to replace a lot of your recording studios, so to speak, the professional recording studios. They're low cost, and you can do a lot inside a computer nowadays, you know, with little money. But yeah, I mean, I think in a certain sense, yeah, it's going to have to remain somewhere around here. In what sense, I don't know. Whether it's Kyle at home on a computer or Jimmy Nutt at the Nut House recording,
yeah.
I don't know. You know, like, that's what I'm saying is like, I was talking to Cobb on Dylan's record, and he was talking about one of his first budgets for him as a producer for a record. I think, I can't remember what he told me. I think it was like, I don't know, like $400,000 or something was a budget for a record he was doing.
Who?
Cobb.
Like, oh, yeah.
Years and years ago. And now he's gotten even bigger in popularity. But the budgets for him to do a record have gotten smaller.
Ah.
And so that in itself is very telling as to the music business at this state. So, I mean, like, yeah, I think the recording will still be around, and I think there will still be, I think Jamie Seago will still be recording in a recording studio somewhere, and, you know, engineering stuff. And I'm sure Ben will still be able to do whatever Ben wants to do. However, I don't know, you know, the next generation, I don't know what they'll be doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure. So what about the talent here? Like, you've traveled all over the world as a musician. Like, there's talented people everywhere.
Yeah.
Really good
musicians
all over the world. Is it any different here, or is it just...
Dick Cooper put it to me best. Somebody's third string band, our own first string band in any city, anywhere in the world, is probably not as good as our third string. Now, you know, yeah, and I think it still stands. I mean, like, I know for me as a kid, it was growing up, going to, you know, Mexican restaurants or whatever, Grady T's or wherever they were, that the band was set up in the corner, and you're sitting there watching these guys who recorded all this material play for 4 hours and realize how, you know, like, you just grew up in it, you know, watching these people play. So, like, you had to be good, especially, like, to go, like, to La Fonda's where, like, Barry and them play. You'd have to be good to go up there to sit in, or else he's not going to call you up.
Yeah.
You know?
So do you think that's why there's just a...
Maybe. Maybe it's like, you know, like, I feel like the Shoals is a little competitive in a sense of, you know, I know I am, you know, I'll listen to other people's records that come out from here and be like, oh, that's really cool. I need to do something better, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And by competitive, I don't mean hate or anything. I'm just saying, like, it's competitive. I mean, like, it's just, and I think within that world, it provides, you know, probably more talented people. I think here they think different too. I think musicians think different. I think they're not, you know, out to be super fancy. You know, they're not out to be the, you know, spotlighted musician on stage. They're kind of there to play this cool part when it needs to be there, you know, type people, or most of the people I've played with around here, you know. I don't know, it's just a different area. Just like Memphis has different players. Nashville has, you know, country guitar pickers for days. Here it's just different. It's just, I don't know, like, the style of playing is different. So, yeah, I mean, to me, like, I would much prefer somebody from this area as to anywhere else. I'm sure the guys in Memphis would probably say they'd prefer the Memphis guys too.
Sure. You know?
But, yeah, to me, they are legit. They're good.
So what about Green Hill? So we're in Green Hill. You grew up in Green Hill.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like there's a lot of really talented people that have come out of this tiny community, you know, right on the border of Tennessee.
Yeah.
Like you and Isbell and Secret Sisters are kind of from around out here.
They are from here, yeah.
I'm sure there's a bunch of others that I don't know about.
Yeah, Chris Tompkins, who's wrote plenty of songs that everybody's sung along to while riding in on the road in their car. Yeah, I mean, there's a small group of us, I guess, but it's very, very, it's not even a city, you know, I mean, it's just a very small little town. And the population when I was growing up really wasn't much of anything that, from what I can remember.
What's up with that?
What I usually tell people is, like, you could, you know, when I started playing, it was either, like, you could go get in a lot of trouble, or you could stay at home and play guitar with a couple of friends, and eventually work your way up to smoking a joint while playing guitars, and drinking whiskey while playing guitars. But still, I think it more or less, I think it kept a lot of us out of trouble. And I think a lot of, like, I know for, like, Jason and the Secret Sisters, I know that they had a family that was all, like, they're musicians. They played a lot, you know. They would have, when they went for Christmas, it was, they picked out guitars and mandolins and whatever else. For me, it was just a piano and then a group of people singing around it.
Do you grow up in a musical household?
I wouldn't say that. There was, let's see, my aunt could play a little bit of guitar. My other aunt could play piano. But all, growing up, it seemed like everybody could sing. Aunt Jeannie would, or my cousin Marilyn would play the piano and would sing. Most of the time it was gospel hymns. we do things like that. But it wasn't anywhere close to like hanging out. When me and Jason used to hang out, he used to tell me a lot of those stories of, you know, what they would do. And it was nothing like that. We didn't do it for hours. You know, it was like, oh, let's play, you know, chopsticks or whatever. You know, most of the time is what it was. But I don't know. I think that's, for me, I think that's what it was. It was, you know, there's nothing else to do around here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a big basketball player growing up, and I didn't make the basketball team. And so I was like, oh, shit, what are you going to do? I guess I'll see what's happening in this guitar. And I started just digging in. And so it kept me out of a lot of trouble.
Nice.
I think that's what it, for me anyway, that's why. But that's cool. I know for Jason too. I mean, like, I think Jason was he seemed to do okay and stay out of a lot of trouble in high school as well.
So you grew up playing guitar and you play a little bit of piano?
No, I was weird. I didn't start really playing guitar until I was like my senior year in high school. But growing up, I think I first picked up and tried to play a guitar when I was in like the fifth grade. And my mom decided to get me guitar lessons. And my guitar teacher, I don't remember his name, I just remember he handed me like one of these like paperback books, and it was just full of like children songs, like I'm trying to think of the one that really made me mad, and I told my mom I'd never go back. Something about bees. Anyway, it was like really simple songs, and being older now, I get why he was doing it. It was like, oh well, here's a, you know, I guess I'd have been like 11-year-old trying to learn guitar. Here's something simple that he probably already knows in his head and can play along.
Sure.
With, but for me, it was boring. Like, I wanted to learn, at that time, I think I wanted to learn Nirvana and Garth Brooks. That's what I wanted to learn. And he would tell me, you gotta get to this book and we'll get to those. It's like, yeah, no, I'll just quit. I'm done with this. And then mom, not even a year later, asked me if I'd want to play piano, because every time we was at my aunt's house, I would be over there banging on a piano. So I was like, sure. And so I started taking piano lessons, and I felt really bad. My mom actually bought like this nice upright piano. And because I did those for a little bit, I think like 3 months or so, I did piano lessons. And she bought real upright piano to put in the house. So my teacher's like, he's really good, he's picking up, and this, that, and the other. And then they asked me to do a recital. That's what they're called, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was something, some part of Beethoven, something or another. And they asked me to do it. And that's where the crowd shyness comes in, and I was like, no, I'm not doing it, Mom. And she was like, you got to do it. And I was like, nope, not doing it. And like, she would literally, me and my sister both went. And so I remember going back the next time and Mom trying to make me get out of the car. I was like, nope, not going in. And so I sat out in the car while my sister had her lesson, and So yeah, I didn't pick up the guitar until I was like 18.
That was probably enough though to like get you going once you...
Yeah, like once I picked it up again, things came a little easier than some of my other buddies that would just try to pick it up. But it still took, it took me about a year to get to where I could play with a band.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what do you consider the Polys? Like, what kind of... You said you don't want to be pigeonholed as Americana, or at least when y'all were starting. What are the Polys?
I don't know. Usually when people ask me, I like pull up a song on Spotify, or ask them what they like, and I try to pull up a song on Spotify that might come close to it. I don't know. I can't remember who I was having this conversation with like a long time ago, but we were talking about how boring it must be to stick into, like, to stay in this one thing all the time. So, like, for me, I don't know. I don't know what other people hear, but for me, it's a constant changing thing. It's not, our last record was definitely a little rock and power pop, maybe sprinkled with little bits of singer-songwriter in there. The second record was definitely a very big singer-songwriter, but it also had kind of like a power pop thing happening too. The first record was definitely an Americana record, there is no doubt about it. But for the fourth record, I don't know what's going to happen.
Have you written a lot of the songs?
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing, is like I tend to just go along with... I've written them, but usually the production will change.
It'll take shape.
Yeah. So me playing them on acoustic guitar is usually way different than what they'll sound like with the whole band recorded.
So they start on acoustic, you write them on acoustic.
Yeah. This go around, we've been doing what we call new type of demo sessions where me and the guys will come in here and we'll all set up and record, and it's literally no ideas when we walk in the door. It's just, we start playing until something sticks. And then when something sticks, I'll try to come up with a vocal melody and start trying to kind of arrange it. And then I'll take that recording home and listen to it over and over and over again and try to write. And then come back and give the final arrangement.
Refine it a little bit.
Yeah. But yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, this time has been very interesting trying to figure out what we're doing for the next record, because literally walking in here with zero ideas and just seeing what happens.
Y'all must be pretty tight now. Y'all been playing together a lot, the same group, for a while now.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We haven't played... Well, we did those sessions not too long ago, but I guess we're still tight. I don't know.
Probably know each other so well.
I'm sure. I mean, like, it used to be really easy to where, like, we wouldn't even worry about rehearsing. It was just kind of like, there's no point. We've played these songs 1,000 times over. Now, I mean, we haven't played since the week before New Year's. So who knows? A month off can...
Man, a whole month.
A lot of dust can build up on it with a month, over the course of a month. But I'm sure, yeah. We were where we could just walk in here and John knew where Spencer knew where John was going, and I knew where Clint was going, and each other knew where... It was just kind of like a thing that... That all takes... I think that's where the road comes in.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just sit in a practice space and expect to just get tight.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of different rooms and hearing things differently. That's where all that comes in.
So who are some of your favorite up-and-comers around here?
Around here?
Yeah.
I used to be really good at this. He's not really an up and comer anymore, because it seems like he's kind of there. But Space Tiger has been a solid one for me for a long time.
I need to talk to him.
Yeah, I like Kyle.
I've heard some of what he's been doing, and it's really good.
Yeah, it's super good.
And he did that on Single Lock, right?
The last one, yeah. But I think he has like two that he released by himself. Like full records, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's got some really good stuff on it. Coffee Black's cool. I'm really interested to hear what Cody Geyser's going to release coming up soon.
Mm.
Even though he's not an up-and-comer, I'm excited about that.
So I know Lynn Bridges helped record some of that stuff. Was he the one who engineered or recorded y'all's record in Water Valley?
No, he had left by then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Actually, I think we missed him by like a year.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I just knew he was over there for a little while.
Yeah, he was Bruce's house guy. But yeah, I think he had just left.
So what do you think about Single Lock? Like what they're doing?
I mean, I don't know what there is to not like about it. If you're from the area, at least.
Yeah.
There for a while, I was a little worried that they were just going to release sad music. But then Space Tiger came around. You know? And Nicole Atkins' record, Goodnight Run the League, came around. But I mean, dude, I mean, like, it just seems like every year their lineup gets stronger.
Yeah. It seems like a tough era to be doing what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and I'm sure it is, you know. I wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah. But, like, I think it's cool that they're doing that, just being from here, you know.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, they're taking a lot of risk. I mean, it might not look like it from the outside, but I mean, you know, I think at the time when they picked up Cedric, I hadn't even heard Cedric's name mentioned in years. Sons of Roswell did some shows with Cedric Burnside and Malcolm Lightning back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Cedric played drums, Malcolm played guitar, it's just two piece. And they would open up for us, and every time I'd see him on the bill, I was like, fuck. Because I knew they were just going to murder it. And so that was the last time I'd heard anything of Cedric.
But it had been a while, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking shit 13 years or something since I'd heard that name mentioned. And then I'm in a meeting with Will Trapp, and he brings up that they signed Cedric Burnside, and I was like, what? He's like, yeah. He's like, can you believe his last record was only released on CD Baby? And I was like, I mean, kinda. I mean, I haven't heard this dude's name in like forever, and you're bringing it up. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I love Cedric and I love his music and I, you know, everything about him, but it was just kind of one of those things like that was not a name that I was expecting
to
bring up.
Same.
And when he did, I was like, cool. And then to see what they did with it, I mean, that was a huge risk, you know. Like,
seems like that one might have been, I mean, I don't know how any of the records do or any of that stuff, but it seemed like he's been one of their more successful.
For sure. I mean, like, I hope that they're in the black with him. It seems like they should be.
It seems like it. Hopefully, I hope he's in the black. And them too.
Yeah, yeah.
They both took a risk on each other, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He's such a good dude. I got to go up to Memphis and sit in on the session up there.
Royal, right?
At Royal, yeah.
Oh, man. How was that?
It was great.
It's great.
I felt like I don't know anything about, I Wikipedia'd Royal immediately. Because Reed was like, we're recording at Royal. And I was like, I don't know what that is. And so I looked it up and was like, oh my God.
Right.
Yeah. So I just felt like a kid in a candy store just walking around. I don't know any of the gear. I know nothing about music or recording or
right. The
mics, you know.
Right. So is it?
But it's still like,
was it a Cedric record or is it like a session thing they're doing? Do you know?
Yeah, it's going to be the next record.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So,
see, Ben didn't really tell me. It just kind of sounded like they were doing like some kind of like session thing out there.
Yeah, he did 20 songs in 3 days.
Hell yeah.
And I came in the second day, just took pictures pretty much the whole day. And he was like, man, I really want to get 20 songs. And I've only, you know, only had like 17. So he was like, I wrote one this morning. I got to write one more before tomorrow. And I'm just like, man, how do you do that? But he's just such a good dude. And I swear, like, he was working harder than anybody in that building by like a ton.
Right.
Like, he was like not stopping, just like over and over again or whatever, or right. one take and nail it, you know, right. like he's a workhorse, man.
Yeah.
He was focused. You could tell he was just in the zone, and he wasn't there to like play or have fun. He was there
to work
and to kill it.
Right.
And it was cool just to watch.
Yeah.
I love that dude.
I think there's times where I've been called a slave dropper.
Really?
By Polly's members. So I get where he's coming from.
I don't know if I've seen that side of you.
Well, I think it's still a soft side. I don't think I ever get like angry or anything. It's just kind of one of those things where it's just like, I don't know. I don't notice that I'm doing it until they bring it up.
Until somebody's pissed.
Yeah. Fuck you, man. Like there was the last Nirvana show, it was really dumb. I should not have booked all this stuff around it. But I think then we did like some session stuff. Then we did like two or three.
You mind if I have one more?
Go ahead. I want to have one with you. Two or three shows right before the Nirvana. Like literally,
when was that?
It was one of the last shows at 116.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
I can't really remember when it was. I think it's like maybe December. But anyway, so I do remember we played Birmingham the night before.
This is just the Polys.
This is just the Polys.
Yeah.
It's not the Nirvana thing that we're supposed to be doing. So we played Birmingham the night before, and we decided to stay in Birmingham. But we had to rehearse the songs because we'd only had like one or two rehearsals. And we picked out like 30-something songs to do. So I'm like still Jeez. Like reading charts and like trying to learn all these words and like... And so I was like, all right, well, let's... Everybody go home. Get whatever you need because it's going to be... We're going to have to go up there and rehearse and then go straight to sound check. And so we were up here rehearsing and everybody's probably a little hungover from the night before. And yeah. It was kind of like we made it about, I don't know, 20 some odd songs in. Somebody was like, Jake, you know, I mean, like, I hate to fucking say this, man, but sometimes you're a fucking slave driver. And I just walked out. And I was like, all right, we'll just meet at 116. We're just going to do the 20 songs that we did.
Yeah.
They're like, what about the one that so-and-so's doing? Well, just fucking bring your chart because that's all.
Yeah.
And we showed up and we killed it. You know, like, I don't think we did all of them. I think we ended up doing like 28 songs or something.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But there's times like that where it's just like I think I've gotten better at it though since then. But it's hard to learn to say no.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, yeah, let's talk about performance spaces. So, to me, it seems weird that there's not, like, a place that's this...
Very weird.
The place to go hear music. Even, like, underground stuff. I mean, there's, like... I know there's, like, a house where there's a lot of cool shows right now.
Yeah.
But there's never, like, this one place that's, like, the cool venue around here. There's a lot of restaurants and bars that host a lot of stuff, which is awesome. What's up with that?
I think it's, tell people that I really think a lot of the area is spoiled. Like, I mean, can you imagine if you were living in Nashville with half the players that are actually from Nashville and the same population of here, and you could just go out any night of the week and fucking see them? I think over the years it's just kind of gotten one of those things where it's just get spoiled. I mean, like, it's just like, oh.
Like, why should I go pay to hear so-and-so?
Yeah, they're going to be playing at Flobama next weekend.
Right.
You know, like, or whatever the case may be, you know. And even for, like, you know, a bigger show, I mean, like, or not a bigger show, but the bands that
just people
hardly ever play here. I think it's just one of those things where like people from the area is just kind of like, I mean, I think if it was a free show, it'd probably be just jam packed full of people and one in and one out. But I think it's, you know, I just think they're spoiled.
Yeah,
they get to go see good music or good musicians, maybe not the same music that everyone enjoys, but still good entertaining music or musicians play for free at some of these other joints, and they don't care about paying tickets. I don't know. I mean, like the 116 thing to me, it sucks that the owner was whatever she was doing. Apparently, that's from what I've heard. Apparently, that was the reason why they shut down. So that sucks because that would have still gave us the one place. And I'm sure one's gonna pop up.
Sure.
I can't imagine it would stay gone for that long. Yeah. It never has.
I've heard a few rumblings.
Oh, cool.
Of things happening, which is exciting.
That's rad because, you know, like me and Kevin were talking about it. You know, like you got Dorm 11, but nobody wants to cross the river.
Right.
I'm
guilty.
Oh, me too. I mean, like, it's like, how much is the lift over there? Because I know that I'm not going to be able to drive back.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah, I've heard Jack's going to open a place in Seven Points. That's what I've heard.
Cool. I know he had talked to me about doing, like, he'd been talking to me for years about doing something like that.
But it's one of those, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. But right. I have a lot of hope.
Oh, yeah.
If anybody can pull it eventually, off, I think he can pull it off.
I think eventually. Jack's one of those very careful guys. I mean, like,
yeah, he's very careful.
It's not like he's being lazy. It's just he's... I know that...
I'd like to see that.
He checked. I know he checked in on the 116 thing after it closed down just to see.
Yeah.
And that was a no-go for whatever reason. And then, I mean, he's checked on a ton of buildings over the years. You know, you come up to me like, then I'm going to go look at this one and see what it, you know. That would be awesome.
I've heard he acquired a certain building.
Fucking fantastic.
Yeah. I hope, I'm like, fingers crossed, like, I hope this happens. Especially in Seven Points. Like, I have a heart for that little area.
He's one of the, well, me too, I can walk there.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I mean, I guess I can walk to downtown too, but it's a shorter walk to Seven Points. He's one of these guys though that, like, I remember doing Old Town Tavern shows and giving him a guest list and him walking back up and be like, yeah, you only get 10, because I mean, dude, you want to make money, don't you? You know, and
he's very
50
practical.
People and the place only holds like 100,
right?
And so, yeah, you're right, Jack. All right, cool.
Yeah. Bless him. Man, Old Town, like, that was very important.
It was super important. I think it still is important.
Yeah, it is.
I think it created a new thing for the area. A new want. You know, something that wasn't there. I think Jack provided it.
Yeah.
But we didn't know that it needed to be provided.
Right.
You know? And, because, like, that place, I remember going there for, was it Dollar Tacos on Tuesday? But he'd have a band play as well. And I think if you bought, like, so many tacos, it was free admission or something. Like, or if you bought so many, whatever. If you spent this amount of money, it was free admission to get in or whatever. Yeah, I mean, like, that was the thing. I mean, like, we talk about Dorm 11, nobody want to cross the river. But, I mean, like, for whatever reason, I would always cross the river and go over there random nights of the week, you know, just to watch bands play. I don't know. Maybe it was the hole-in-wall environment that I loved about it. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a good place.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you still smoke in there when he had it?
I think so. I think so. I remember seeing Doc for the first time. Well, I lived with Doc for a while, and he started doing his thing when we were living together.
Oh, cool.
He was still like Derek Daly and, you know, his few incarnations with String.
Right.
And, Flame Beneath the Skin, I think it was, and all that.
See, I don't remember that.
You don't?
The first time I met Doc, it was Doc.
Yeah, and then he became Doc.
Yeah.
And then I saw him, because I was living with Chris Mullins. I don't know if you know him.
Name's, well, he probably only familiar because of the basketball player, but...
Yeah. He was the only person I knew in Florence when I moved here in 2000. And he ended up playing.
Where are you from?
I'm from Huntsville.
Oh, really?
I moved here to go to UNA and study photography in 2000. I've been here ever since. So, lived with Derek for a while, and Chris lived with Derek, and he played keyboards with, on his first EP. They kind of wrote it together.
Cool.
But then me and Susan went and saw Doc at Old Town one time, and he had a different... Well, I think Chris was in the, played that one show with him, and then not long after... Susan ended up joining the band and played with him for a long time. Yeah, that was really fun. That was a fun era. I kind of miss it.
I do too.
I miss it a lot, actually.
We used to travel with him a decent amount, so like it was always fun traveling around with it. And that was the thing. Doc's Victims, Enemies, and Old Friends, I mean, like, for a DIY record. I mean, like,
yeah, that was a hell of a record.
It was a hell of a record. I remember Patrick McDonald... We were up here, we're coming up here to do something for the Pollies. And Patrick and Chris, I think, lived together. And so they were going to swing by my house in Greenhill and pick me up. And then we're going to come up here. And I got in the car and he's like, hey, you want to hear this new Doc Daly stuff? And he actually played me Victims, Enemies, and the song. And that was the first time I heard somebody from here actually take advantage of string players, and I was like, hold on, who's playing strings? Because like to me, like, it was like a game changer. It was like, there's people locally that are good string players. Alright, I want to do it.
And you put strings on a lot of Pollies records, right?
Yeah, the last one was the only one that never that didn't have them. And that was just kind of out of trying something to fill that spot instead of strings. I'm sure this next record.
A lot of noise.
Since, the ongoing.
Man, I feel bad. I haven't heard Transmissions as much as I wish I had, but I have. It's a cool record.
You should revisit it.
I need to revisit
it.
You
can skip all the noise.
I like the noise. That's one of my favorite things about what y'all do, man.
Dude, it was...
y'all make some damn good noise.
it was an ongoing joke that that the record was going to be called Jay Fine Synthesizer. Because it was like every song was like, all right, let's put the Juno on it, or let's put a micro cord on it, or let's do this. It wasn't a typical thing. I mean, like, I think there's a little bit of Mellotron on it, you know. And that's where, you know, some of the string, real like string sounds come from.
Sure.
But yeah, most of it was just cool. Like, how can I? It was another, because I thought that Not Here was a departure from Americana. I thought in my head while making that record, felt like, all right, we're going another direction. Whew. All right. Nope. Still, you know, and not that I hate Americana or anything. It was just kind of like one of those things. It's like, I don't know, I just wanted, felt like that probably wasn't the proper genre for me. And so, on Transmissions, I really wanted to make sure, like, all right, call me Americana. And they did. And so now I'm just like, whatever, call me whatever you want to call me.
Yeah.
Shit. I'm just going to make whatever album we think we should make. And, but, yeah, I mean, the next record, from the outside looking in right now, pretty sure it'll have strings all over it.
Nice.
Yeah. I think I'm going to try to meld the Transmissions in with strings.
Fun.
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Yeah. I think that'll be fun. Also want to try to get away from the whole... That was the main point of doing it with the band. Was trying to get away from the whole, typical progressions that I would use in songs. It makes me think differently when I'm with other people.
Nice.
Instead of just sitting down and be like, oh, I love C. You know, I don't want to regret writing the song out of C.
Man, let's take some pictures.
Let's do it.
Yeah, thank you. That was very comprehensive.
Yeah, man.
I learned a lot.
I don't know how much you learned. It was a lot of rambling. That's what I do in interviews, though.
Well, I'm not really an interviewer. I just kind of ask stuff that I want to know about, and then I have to go back and listen to all this crap and pull something out of it.
Right.
But I appreciate it, man. It was, to me, like, I made a list of all the people that I kind of wanted to be a part. And I have a lot of people I need to add to the list, but you were definitely one of the people I wanted to talk to.
Awesome.
Just because, you know, I want this project to, like, span a lot of eras, because I think there's a lot of young people. I want it to hit on people that people don't know about that are associated with, like, Muscle Shoals thing. Because people always talk about the same people.
Yeah.
Over and over again. Yeah. Which is fine.
True. They probably shouldn't be talking
about it. Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of other people that are doing amazing things. And, you know, to me, you're definitely one of those people. And you're kind of like one of the... You do a lot of important things with a lot of noteworthy people. But I like what you're doing. And thanks for letting me come.
Dude, I'm glad. This. I'll be honest with you. When you sent me that text, I was like, hold on, I have something today. Because I was in your mix and I was like, I started not to send anything back because I was like, nah, it's wrong enough. I was like, hold on, let me make sure. And then, so I was like, sorry, who is this?
I do that all the time. Like,
But then, actually, like, right after you were like, Sabram, I was like, shit, and then literally my Google alert goes off February 5th, Abraham Studio.
Well, I'm glad you were here.
I put it on a different calendar.
Cool. All right, well, thanks, man.
Yeah, man.